Well, I'm going to assume that those that need to be here at 9 are here, and we'll welcome anybody else that comes in a bit later. My name's Nancy, and it's my first time at Holden, so if it's your first time too, we're all learning together about this wonderful village and where things are and the community that it forms. I would like to get to know each of you a little bit, and maybe we can get to know each other a little bit, starting probably with names. Would be very helpful to me. Hey, Daniel.
Hi.
Come on in. And I'm wondering if we could slowly say the name, because you know when we go around the circle, it's really hard to remember them 5 seconds later. You know. And also, what your connection is, or maybe what brought you here. So my name's Nancy, and I've been hearing about this place for 12 years. And I only live about 6 hours away in the mountains of North Idaho. We have something in common, I can tell. And it's just a privilege to be, I finally made connections with Holden Village, so it's a privilege to be able to come here and finally experience what so many people have been talking about all these years.
My name's Pat Nelson, mm-hmm. And actually, I've been wanting to come here for over 40 years. I heard about it first, I don't know if I was still teaching at Hope Lutheran and then at that time, but it just never worked out, and then I had little kids, and so now's my time, so I'm really looking forward to my week, and planning to come back many more times.
My name is Lorna, and I've been at Holden lots of times. I really don't know how many times. I came with little children, and then later I came with teenagers, and then I came with friends as I became a one-person family again, and I've enjoyed it every time. Every time has been under different conditions. I'm now retired for the third time, so I could actually come in September. So that's the first time I've ever come in the fall. The other times have always been in the very busy summer. Mm-hmm. So this was an opportunity to come when school isn't in session, or is in session, but I'm not.
I'm David. I think I have started coming up here at near the beginning, maybe the first or second year that Holden was in operation. Sometimes when I've come up, I've wanted to immerse myself in all the study that goes on in the liturgy, and other times when I've come up, I've just wanted to hike. And I think the thing that's nice is that Holden has been accepting of however I was in whatever place I was at the time that I came here. So it's been 3 years since we've been up here, and we are definitely about due to be back up here with Holden.
I'm Becky, wife of David, and I think the first time I came up was 1971, and I had the opportunity to work on just the housekeeping staff for 3 weeks in the 80s, which was very enlightening. Every time I come to Holden, it is a renewal. And I think we try to take Holden back to our lives outside. And I think people are affected when we go home as well. We take it with us.
Thank you.
What's the question?
Well, the question is, I just wanted to get to know each of you just a little bit before we begin.
Oh,
and
okay.
Also for each other. So, your name and kind of your connection to Holden, or what brought you here.
Okay, my name's Mary, and I'm from Wisconsin. And this was my first trip up here. Never heard of the place before, but I go to church with a retired pastor. And he's been up here 3 or 4 times, and he says this is the place to come to get rejuvenated, to hit the hiking trails and peace and all this kind of stuff. So I came up here as his caretaker, because he wanted to come up here one more time and do the 101. And so that's why I'm here. And I love the place. I think it's been a wonderful experience. I've been here one whole week. I leave today, unfortunately. So I won't be able to get the rest of the hiking trails in that I wanted to. But I got to see the bears, and I got to see the Stellar Jay, and I got to see a few other things. So it's been a real nice experience for me.
Wonderful. Well, blessings on your journey back.
Thank you.
My name is Daniel. My last name is Toller, but I don't know if you know Garrison Keillor, but he talks about the Tollers up there. Well, I'm one of them.
You're famous, Daniel.
My dad homesteaded in North Dakota, then he went to Minnesota, and up in Chicago, and then during World War II he went to Quad Cities. So I live now in Quad Cities, actually Rock Island, Illinois. And I first heard about Holden. I lived in a small town at that time outside of the Quad Cities, and the pastor in that small town was all excited about Holden. And this was in the 70s, early 70s. And he talked about spiritual renewal, spiritual connection and all that. I was building a house and raising 2 sons, and I wasn't quite that interested in taking off for a period of time. Things changed around. I became single in the late 80s and remarried. My wife will be here shortly. And she was also interested in Holden, and I came up the first time in 94 and really liked it. Did several hikes and went up to Holden Lake, and I always remember going up those switchbacks and had packs of about 50 pounds. And because I had 2 steps, a stepdaughter and a stepson with me, and I had their stuff. And it was quite a trip, and we're planning on doing it again tomorrow. It should be a little better weather. I mean, it's not cooler. But I always found it at Holden, subsequently 3 more times, a very spiritual connection, not necessarily with the awe and wonder of the area, but also the people who are here, very very spiritual indeed, found the centering within themselves, and they're able to express it and can just talk to anybody and feel at home. So I really feel connected here, and I love it very much.
Thank you.
My name is Jim, and like David and Becky, my wife Karen and I had an early life at Holden as a young married couple. And it was right shortly after I'd come back from Vietnam, and I discovered C.S. Lewis at the time, the young guy, and of course finding Narnia here. Sort of was like having my hand in an electric box. And my son and I, we hiked in from the other side. My wife was pregnant with our twin daughters up here. So we had this early life, and then it was 30 years before we got back here. And we came back through a part of my life that exists with Hispanic, Latino people. And through that journey, I was asked to be part of Elder Hostel 2 years ago. And the Elder Hostel experience was kind of like being met at the door for me. And people took me by the hand and walked me through. And when we left in September of 2006, and we brought my mother to live with us in Yakima. And so it was like all of the people an elder house that helped bring me closer to my mother as we brought her closer to us. So that's how I'm here.
My name is Marie, and I'm here because my youngest sister wisely recognized that I was in big need of a recharge, mentally, physically, and spiritually, because I've been caring for my 90-year-old mother for varying degrees for about 4 years. Now she has some severe health problems and dementia, and it's been a real window on aging, and it's also been a 24/7 job, and I've been late to recognize that, hey, it's good to ask for help, and so I'm deeply grateful to be here. It's my first time, and now I see what my sister loves so much about the place.
Welcome, Marie. Claire.
Hi, I'm Claire, her twin sister. And our little sister Peggy, the mommy of two twin baby boys, came here for the second time this summer, and they just rave about it and they look forward to it. And very surprisingly, like out of the blue, she thought that we should go. And I thought it was just kind of, I knew it was church affiliated, but I thought it was just camp. And my plan was to sleep and read for 5 or 6 days. And this is also an insight on Peggy. She's not traditionally religious, but she and her husband have a hunger for church, and it's very touching to me that they love this place because it's obviously very spiritual. And I'm surprised by what it is, but I'm jumping in the water and I'm loving it so far.
Swim well.
Thank you.
Evan.
Yes, I'm Evan, and I'm in a group of people who are old enough to appreciate that my first name is Dale. And I don't like to use that. I asked my mother, where were you? Were you in a cave? Where were you? But she claims both of those were family names, and so I got them. Anyway, Evan, like Pat, I've known about Holden for over 40 years. Learned about it when I was in college, and coming here has been on my bucket list. So here I am, I can check it off.
Yay.
And I plan to come back. I hope that works out.
Keith.
My name is Keith. I live in Vancouver, Canada, originally born in Australia. And I learned of Holden probably 8 or 9 years ago, but didn't do anything about wanting to come here. I did last year, and the fires intervened, last year was cancelled. And so here I am here and feel very much connected to this place. My sense of the divine is very much mediated to me through creation, and so I feel very content to be here.
Welcome, finally. It takes a while for some people to get here, but it's worth it. Pat.
So it's how we got here? Is that what
just
about?
A couple sentences of your connection.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, well, I got thrown into Holden in 1970 because our campus pastor asked me and another student to be representatives to our campus ministry to the college-age Lutheran youth group that was having their annual meeting up in Holden. I had no clue. It was amazing, making lemonade by scooping your water out of Holden Lake, because that's what they did back then. The water wasn't treated at that point. And it took me 19 more years before I got here again. in 89, and I think this is my seventh time.
Wonderful.
And it's never often enough and never long enough, because I've never been here for more than a week. And coming from Illinois, it's quite a trek to get here. It's a major project and rather expensive, but oh, I love it.
Welcome once again for your seventh or eighth time.
So this is number seven.
Number seven. Well, thank you. I appreciate you all sharing just a little bit. Oh, Carol, did you want to be a part of the circle?
Well, sure. If you don't mind, I'll stay back here because in my capacity as having other jobs, I'll be in and out a lot.
Right.
But I'm Carol Lund-Hinderle, co-director with Tom and Paul. And my first time here was also in 1970. I came up absolutely green from California as a 20-year-old, volunteered for 2 months. And you know, I've been sort of spent a lot of time here in the 70s and then was very far away in Wisconsin, hardly came back at all until Paul and Tom and I were invited to apply for the directorship. And so that's sort of my history with Holden in a nutshell.
It's interesting, the long string of connections in all these various places that may go kind of on a sabbatical for a while, but eventually it seems to pull people back at some point. When Carol and I talked, and she graciously issued an invitation for me to come up, the piece that was initially supposed to be here was that fulfilled by a physician talking about health issues with aging. I'm a physician. I practiced medicine for about 20 years, 25 years, then went back to seminary, pastored churches for about 12 years, and now I lead retreats and offer spiritual direction and do some writing. So I think what's going to unfold here is an interweaving of the physical aspects of aging with a bit of the medical insight and scientific insight, but also just as we're very complex people and we're whole and we interweave these things, also we're going to spend some time with the psychology and the spirituality of what's happening, even as our bodies are physically aging. Since this is an elder village, it seemed appropriate to focus on the second half of life, which is such an incredibly rich and scary time for all of us. So I'd like to begin with the scripture passage and story, because we live a narrative. And oftentimes when we dip into the narratives that are in scripture, there's some deep insights for us about our own journey. And we may read them a whole lot differently now than we did when we were 18 or 20 or 30 or 40. And the word that comes to us, that's spoken to us, is tempered and enriched by the fact that we've lived lives. We've had so many experiences. And also, our mortality. We're closer to it now, and in the second half of life, we are facing it more. And there's a depth and a richness that comes from these narratives for us in this very special place in our lives that it's good to share, and it's good to listen with that ear. I had thought about two scriptures for this morning. I think we'll just do one, because we're also going to talk a little bit about aging. From a physical standpoint, and then we'll come back to more what does this mean to us spiritually. So it'd be kind of an Oreo cookie type of morning. And I think we're just going to do one in deference to time. And that'll be the one of in Exodus with Moses at the burning bush. So what I wanted to do a little bit is I wanted to set the story in some context, because not all of us read through the story last week, like I did. And it helps to kind of know where the story's coming from and where Moses is coming from. So what I wanted to do is, remember those, we're all the same age, those flannel board things that you had in Sunday school? We're going to do a flannel board of the Moses story up to the burning bush time together, okay? So, who was Moses? Okay, just toss it out. Anybody remember?
Bullrushes.
Pulled out the bullrushes, right. And what was his ethnic group, his tribe?
Hebrew.
He was Hebrew, and where were they living?
Egypt.
Whoa. A little bit of tension set up right at the beginning, right? So why was he in the bulrushes?
Because they were going to kill all of the firstborn.
Yeah, yeah, it's Rwanda again. It's the Balkans, okay? History.
The boys. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just history boys. Repeats itself. So they were killing all the boys that were Hebrew boys. So how did Moses rescue? What happened?
The princess was bathing.
Pharaoh's daughter.
The baby.
Pharaoh's, of all people, an Egyptian. An Egyptian woman saw a baby.
Royalty.
Royalty. So here we have this incredible contrast of Moses as somebody from an oppressed people, all of a sudden being extracted and pulled up from that environment and put in the very center of power that was the cause of the oppression, but welcomed with love. I mean, we can only assume a young woman seeing a baby, what happens? doesn't matter what your ethnic group is, does it? So we have, outside of power, we have this woman that comes in and says, that doesn't matter. Here's the baby, and I'm going to raise him. Now, there's another really fascinating twist to this story. This is a baby that was still nursing, right?
Right.
So what's the irony here? What happens?
So his sister comes and says, I know someone who could nurse this baby, which happens to be his mother.
Yeah. And what does Pharaoh's daughter do? She
puts him in the care of his mother.
And pays her. I mean, there's a little humor in this story too, isn't there? It's kind of like, look what just happened. Talk about going around power and around the edicts and around the killing. Here's this love that comes up and it surfaces through the sister and the biologic mother and now the adoptive mother that just creates something very different than what's going on in the rest of the countryside. Okay, so eventually, I mean, they nursed a long time back then, but eventually Moses is weaned. And then what happens?
He lives in the palace.
Yes. So he's raised as an Egyptian. He's raised with all the trappings of the power that's oppressing his own people. And I can only assume he's raised with that perspective and that mind view and that he sees the world through Egyptian eyes.
And educated, he would have been.
He would have been educated. So some very powerful pieces are coming into play here.
And he's good friends with Pharaoh's son. They grew up together.
Yeah, and family. Mm-hmm. And I can only assume that there was love there. I mean, it doesn't speak of his being mistreated. He was rescued. He was provided for. He was given a nursing mother of his own people. You know how we inherit. It says that we breathe in our stories of who we are in our milk that we drink, you know. So he was given back to his people to be nursed. There's something important about that. So there was some ground laid there at some point of connection with his own people. And then, as Keith said and as Patty said, he was educated and loved and brought up by the oppressor's people. So we have this human being standing with one foot in two very different worlds, having been sustained and nursed and brought up in two different places. One is oppressed and the other is the oppressor. So you can almost feel him being pulled, can't you? Pulled in two different directions by positive forces, not negative, but positive forces from a people that have taken him in and cared for him or gave him birth and life from the very beginning. So this is where our story starts from this morning. And I also want to put it in, it was Jim that I think wrote the words for this week that I think are so marvelous, so that being a pilgrimage, a week of journey. And that's what I'd like to pull out of this story. And Moses has already had an amazing journey, an amazing pilgrimage, interweaving two very different peoples and cultures and ways of seeing the world. So, if we think of journey as having a rhythm to it, like a beat, okay? This is our life beat. So help me fill in the blanks. In your journey of each day, what do? You get up, right? What's next? What's your everyday journey? Yeah, thank you, Becky. Let's get the speed going. What do you do?
Shower, breath.
Shower.
Exercise.
Exercise. What else?
Feed the cat.
Feed the cat.
Take out my notebook.
Ah, the writer, the poet in our midst.
Make coffee.
Oh, thank you. Caffeine. What else?
Practice.
What's that, Daniel?
Practice.
Daniel's a lover of music. Plays the piano, the clarinet. So you go to your love.
Uh-huh.
You spend time. What else?
Read the paper.
Oh, yes. Connect with other people, other stories, other narratives.
Journal.
Journal.
Check my email.
Oh, yes. Woman of the Times. Okay, so Moses ended up killing an Egyptian because the Egyptian was beating on a Hebrew. So somehow, that old nurturing, that connection with his people, came to the fore in the midst of his normal rhythm. Okay? He left. He went to Midian. The priest of Midian gave him one of his daughters. Now we have another connection going, another narrative with a different family. He marries the daughter. He has a son. He's out tending his father-in-law's flocks. And he has the day all planned. He has that rhythm going, okay? He has coffee, newspaper, journal, notebook, email. Only for Moses, it's tending these flocks, and he's leading them. He's leading them beyond the wilderness. I have friends that tend sheep. They say that you can't just stand out in front of the flock and go somewhere and expect them to follow. You go from behind, and you bring them up from behind, and you shepherd the people that are going on, or the sheep that are going astray. So there's this wonderful inclusiveness. So here's Moses with his plan for the day. And this long line, stragglers, a flock's going ahead of him. There's a rhythm, right? There's a momentum. He knows where he's going, he knows what he's going to do. And then, all of a sudden, he sees something over there. Not where he's going, but over there. And he has to stop the rhythm of his every day. And the flock have to be pulled in and stopped because he saw something over there that wasn't in his original plan or his original day. And he stops and he looks and he sees something on fire. And you know what he says? He says, I have to turn aside. That's where our story starts. I'm going to read the passage, and I want you to listen to it. I want you to listen to it to see if there is a word or a phrase that somehow speaks to you. It doesn't matter what word or what phrase it is. It'll be your word. Your phrase, for some reason, has special meaning, kind of sparkles and stands out. This is an ancient practice of the church. It comes from the first 500 years of the church, and it's a way to enter into the story like we've been entering into it. And it's called Lectio Divina, which is kind of a Latin, strange-sounding word, but it's an incredible practice. It gives us much wisdom and a different way of interacting with the scripture. So I want you to listen. There's no right word, there's no wrong word. Don't be anxious. Just listen and see if there's a word that speaks to you. Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Oreb, the mountain of God. There an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of a bush. He looked, and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed. Then Moses said, "I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush is not burned up." When the Lord saw that Moses had turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, "Moses, Moses." And Moses said, "Here I am." Then God said, "Come no closer. Remove the sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." And God said further, "I'm the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. I'm going to invite each of us to just share the word or the phrase, no explanation, but the word or phrase that kind of stood out for you. And we're going to do it by something called mutual invitation. So it means that we invite another to share the word or the phrase. So Becky, I'm going to invite you to share the word or the phrase, and then you can invite someone else.
Keeping the flock.
Ah, keeping the flock. Nice. Keith?
Moses hid.
Pat.
God of my father.
Get to invite somebody.
Oh, excuse me.
That you can point if you don't remember their name, and it's a good way to learn the name.
So that would be fine.
Marie.
Afraid to look at God.
Huh. Here I am.
Claire?
Burned but not consumed. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Daniel.
Daniel, yes. I said Vernon Bush. Jim.
Thank you. I have to turn aside. David.
Moses. Moses.
Mary. Mary.
Angel.
And I was affected by the same phrase Jim was, turn aside. Usually there's a reason why a particular phrase or word spoke to us. There's something in our past life or our present situation that caused that to have some special meaning for us. So I'm going to ask Keith, because he has a lovely accent, to read this passage again slowly for a second time. And I invite each of you to listen again for a word or phrase. It may be the same one, it might be a different one. But I want you to then identify or try to think about, why is that phrase speaking to you this morning? What is there about your past or your present that caused that word or phrase to have something to say to you, you personally, this morning? There's something. There's a reason each of those phrases spoke to us.
Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There, the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of a bush. He looked, and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed. Then Moses said, I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush is not burned up. When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here I am. Then he said, Come no closer. Remove the sandals from your feet. For the place on which you are standing is holy ground. He said further, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God.
We'll take a minute, maybe two. If you're comfortable, I'd like for you to turn to your neighbor
and just share what that word or phrase was and why you think it's speaking to you this morning, the Holden Village. So there's an even number of people. Works out well. If you would prefer not to be with somebody that you came with, feel free to switch chairs. But otherwise, it will be Keith. Okay, that would be fine. Switch chairs if you would like to be with somebody other than someone you know so well.
Okay.
I spoke to many of them.
Well, okay, so let's do.
Here I am.
It's like a chat one.
Yes, it is. It works for me. Many times I want to go to the church and say,
Maybe one more minute to share and then
don't have
let this go on forever. Well, it can definitely go on longer than this. This may have opened. There's one more piece of this process, as wonderful as it is, and the insights that can come to us from the early church through this process. We're going to read it one more time. And what I want you to listen for is, what is God saying to you this morning at Holden Village, personally, in this particular narrative, in this particular story? David, would you be comfortable reading this? Some people are okay when I just ask them. And
sure, I'll have a crack at it.
Okay, thank you. Okay, very slowly, and it starts here, and it goes through here.
Ends right there.
It ends right there, David.
Okay.
So what is the Spirit's voice? What is God's voice in this passage to you?
Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There, the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the bush. He looked, and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed. Then Moses said, "I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush is not burned up." When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see God, God called to him out of the bush, "Moses, Moses." He said, "Here I am." Then he said, "Come no closer, remove your sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." He said further, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Thank you.
Thank you for your word to us on this morning. Be it a word of comfort or a word of challenge. It's surely a word that we need to hear. We thank you for a community in which we can listen. Amen. Yeah. I forgot to have the candles lit, Marie. This is surely holy ground. Would you like to light them? It's a little light.
I would. Oh, my. I can find my Kleenex and my matches.
Each morning we'll begin, we'll get started a little sooner tomorrow. We'll begin with a personal encounter with a scripture story that hopefully could help guide us in this week and the days ahead in our lives. A group effort. We're also going to talk just a little bit about aging from a physical perspective, which I think greatly informs our spiritual journey. This is a phenomenal time of our lives. It's been said that the second half of life is perhaps, what was that, Pat? The greatest, Pat said. Perhaps it's the greatest. It is certainly, Robert Browning wrote a poem that said that the second half of life was what the first half was created for, was to let us walk through the second half and become whole and integrated and a person that we could have never been earlier had we not walked through our first half of life. So it's a privileged time. It's a privileged time for us to be together, and it's a privileged time for us to be able to have some space to turn aside from the rhythm of our daily life and to look and listen for God in the burning bushes. This is a week that's a gift that's been given to us for that purpose. When we speak of aging, what do we think of?
Getting old.
Okay. And let's pull that out a little bit. What do you mean by getting old?
You can't do the things you used to do when you were younger.
Uh-huh.
You're more wiser, of course, but or should be. But it's still, your body's gets the aches and pains, and you just can't do the things you used to do.
Right. Any other?
I would say acceptance and to trust and face the aging process and a letting go of some of the things that I hadn't been able to do. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is just being in the present moment and knowing that my feet are on holy ground wherever I'm at. And trust that. It takes a long time. It takes the first half to do that. I couldn't do that when I was in 30s and 40s.
Right.
It's a matter of recognizing, knowing that the mortality that you talked about, and then that life every day I wake up is a gift.
Yeah.
I think I feel a greater gratitude than I did when I was younger. I didn't live each day, well, I didn't live each day being grateful for all I have and for all my blessings, and now it just is amazing to me.
More patience.
Patience, yeah.
But experience it in the season of the year, the autumn of the fall.
Yeah. This is a good time for us to be here, isn't it, Keith? Thank you. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, we're in the autumn and the fall of our lives, aren't we?
Very nice. One of the downsides that I don't know if I'm imagining it, but I think it's real, is that people have a different attitude towards me. Mm-hmm. If I were 20 years younger, my opinion or my ideas would be very much listened to.
Yes.
But gradually, I'm an old woman. And
how did that happen?
I don't know.
I know. You look in the mirror. Who is that?
Okay, I don't look.
So it's even other people's attitudes that sometimes surprise me. Mm-hmm. Because I think, I do know that.
Yeah.
And I never thought it would happen, but I'm now the old woman taking in...
That's true.
And I don't know how to deal with that.
Okay.
I don't want to deal with it, maybe.
We're talking about journey. Mm-hmm. This is a journey that none of us really want to go on, if we're really honest, right? It's not a journey where we bought the ticket and chose.
That would be true.
But we're going on it. Okay? And you all have brought out this wondrous, kind of like Moses, this wondrous tension of loss, decline.
Deterioration.
And yet, I heard the words wisdom. I heard, is there anything more beautiful than autumn, Keith? Mm-hmm. I look at those leaves and think, who knew dying could be so beautiful? Mm-hmm. So there's gift and there's loss. The loss is physical. The gift is spiritual and psychological.
I have a friend who's 87. And she's kind of like my role model for as I get older. But she tells me she constantly is struggling with the challenge of staying flexible. Mm-hmm. So that she doesn't get too opinionated.
Right.
You know, right. That, you know, this, you know, it was better when, or why don't they do it this way now? And I can see.
It's about, as Daniel said, being in the present, not in the past. That is a challenge. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is a challenge because we were physically young and attractive and people paid more attention to us back then. So things were better in a way. And it's natural to think back upon those times and have a struggle with where we are now. But I'm wondering if it's in that tension. It was in that tension that Moses is Moses. And a very unique individual. And maybe the only individual that could have led his people out of oppression was the fact that he stayed in that tension. And he grew from it. And he listened for God's voice, and he turned aside from his own agenda to look at the burning bush and to go there. I think there's real wisdom in how he walked this piece of his journey into how we can walk the piece of our journey that we're in right now, from first half to second half of life. There's a few things that I'd like to just give to you, not to be morbid, but because I think it can enhance where we are. And I think it's in a week like this where an awareness, again, of our mortality actually can be a life-giving exercise. You know, the Buddhists have a meditation exercise of going to the cemetery and contemplating your own death and writing your own obituary. Yeah, as a way of giving flavor, incredible flavor to the taste of every single day, like Pat said, of how rich. Blessings on your journey, Evan. Thank Evan you. Has to catch a boat and a bus. Blessings, Evan.
Goodbye,
Evan.
Thank you.
Go with peace.
Thank you.
Talk will be cool.
It brings out, it's like herbs and salt. It brings out the richness of the flavor of every single day as a gift. If we do realize that there may not be a tomorrow quite like today, there may be more loss tomorrow. Physically than we have today. So if we can just go there for a very short space. We have a coffee break at 10:15. We're supposed to go to 10. Do I have your permission maybe to go to 10:10?
Yeah.
And then we still have 5 minutes to... We're going to look at aging from a cellular perspective. We're all composed of these cells, because I think there's some very great insight for us in this. When a cell is new and young, I have a 12-week-old grandson. He has new and young cells. They are function well, and they divide and make new cells. My cells, which are almost 60 years old, are not functioning as well as they used to, and they are increasingly losing their opportunity and their ability to divide and make new cells. And from a cellular perspective, that's what aging is. You know, if you look in a microscope at my grandson's Alex cells, and you put my cells under a microscope, they're going to look identical. You can't tell aging. Like, we look at skin features, and we look at hair color, and we look at body, and we know that person is 60 versus 20. But if you look at our cells under a microscope, you can't tell. You couldn't tell Alex from mine. The difference in aging from a cellular perspective is function. They lose their function. And the key piece is that they lose their ability to divide and make new cells. So it's this lack of being able to reproduce, and you know it affects us on a bodily level. It affects women somewhere in the 40s. Men have more longevity with their fertility than women, but it starts declining. So from both the cellular perspective and from an organ system perspective, that's a key thing. Not being able to reproduce anymore seems to be the sign from a physical perspective of our aging. This other stuff is kind of cosmetic, but what will cause disease and death is the loss of function. And that's the real piece of what it means to age. There's all these other things about not being flexible, about wanting to live in the past. We have to be aware of that and try not to let that happen, but that has nothing to do with our lifespan. But this other does. It's a very key thing. Now, there's two theories as to why cells age. Why would God do this? Why would each of us, who is an amazingly unique creature, each of us has gifts for the rest of us that are phenomenal and stunning and unique. They only can be given by us, because only Jim and Daniel and Pat and Mary. You are the only Jim and Daniel and Pat and Mary that's ever going to be. And you are a wondrous creation. Remember that Psalm 139 when you were knit together in your mother's womb. So why would this gift be given and also be given built in genetically? Death. You will not be around. You know, if you make it to age 65, your lifespan is 85. That's the statistics. And those of us who have made it to 65, you're looking at, let's be very honest, 20 years or less, by and large, on average. It is built in genetically. It's thought that our lifespan's about 30% determined by the genetics. But our lifespan is also modified by another 70% of how we live. And struggling against being flexible, struggling against being active, struggling against not only repeating this every day, but stopping. And looking on the horizon and seeing something new and different. That's a burning push that maybe God is speaking to us, coming alive in our lives. There's a Bob Dylan quote that I put at the beginning. He that's not busy being born is busy dying. This is a time of birth. It's a time of birth, my friends. It's the time of the most extraordinary birth thing that we've ever known. It was modeled at our physical birth, but this is the birthing of who we are as David. And Becky and Warren and Pat and Keith and Marie and Claire. This is it. This is the time.
Thank God.
God for giving that to us.
Yes. Thank God for giving us the second half of life. Not everybody gets this gift. It's a privilege. We can never exceed our genetic potential. You have in your cells genetically encoded a lifespan. And at least with the science we have now, you're not going to exceed that. But you can maximize it. Okay? So there's this concept of co-creator. We have been genetically encoded, our cells, with a lifespan. We can never exceed that. But we can be co-creators with the spirit to maximize what we've been given and to be open for the new birth. This is Advent. The second half of life is a perpetual Advent. But it's also a perpetual Lent. Something is dying, and it's our physical nature. But we are being born. The people that we have been created to be. This is what's being birthed in the second half. And I suspect the relationship between the physical decline and the spiritual and the psychological birth, there may be an actual dependency on that. It's not just interrelated. I think it may be dependent. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean we make accepting our achy joints and our chronic illnesses and eventually our mortality any easier. But it does make us look underneath it and say, okay, where is this journey taking me? And where's that burning bush? Where is it? It's out there on the horizon. Where is it? And what am I to hear in it? For everything, there's a season. This is our season. And it's also 10 after 10. For everything, there's a time. So to, with all good respect, Jim will be meeting with us at 10:50.
10:50?
At 10 till, back in this room. We have 10:15 now to have a little refreshment. Maybe, if you wish, you can certainly stay here and continue conversation about what I had to interrupt you with. We also get to wave goodbye to Evan and other people that are leaving today. And then Jim's going to continue this journey with us, which will be a great privilege, in about a little more than half an hour.
Thank you.
Sorry, I'm not going to be here for the rest of the
I'm sorry you are too, Mary. You're,